appreciate the prayer that's gone before, and as always, ask that you continue to pray for me this morning. If you have your Bibles with you today, we're going to do quite a bit of reading in the beginning, and then hopefully we'll go back and we'll try to pull some lessons from the things that we've read. Many times my messages have a certain theme to them. I don't really have a theme this morning, but rather just want to look at an account in Scripture and do more of an expository message from it, or a commentary, if you will. And it's the account that we find recorded in three of the Gospels dealing with the woman that has the issue of blood for a period of 12 years. I'd heard a message earlier this week on this topic from a different minister, and it stirred my mind to think upon these things and study upon them and hopefully bring some things that would be needful to us here in this place. But we'll look to Matthew chapter 9 first this morning as we look to the three different accounts in the Gospels. Matthew chapter 9, and we'll begin in verse 18. While he spake these things unto them, behold, there came a certain ruler and worshipped him, saying, My daughter is even now dead, but come and lay thy hand upon her, and she shall live. And Jesus arose and followed him, and so did his disciples. And behold, a woman which was diseased with an issue of blood 12 years came behind him and touched the hem of his garment. For she said within herself, If I may but touch his garment, I shall be whole. But Jesus turned him about, and when he saw her, he said, Daughter, be of good comfort, thy faith hath made thee whole. And the woman was made whole from that hour. Then we'll look at Mark chapter 5 this morning. Mark chapter 5, and we're going to see Mark gives more detail than Matthew. And then when we get to Luke's account, we're going to see Luke gives probably the most detail. But in Mark chapter 5, and we'll begin at verse 22. And behold, there cometh one of the rulers of the synagogue, Jairus by name, and when he saw him, he fell at his feet, and besought him greatly, saying, My little daughter lieth at the point of death. I pray thee, come and lay thy hands on her, that she may be healed, and she shall live. And Jesus went with him, and much people followed him and thronged him. And a certain woman, which had an issue of blood 12 years, and had suffered many things of many physicians, and had spent all that she had, and was nothing bettered, but rather grew worse, when she had heard of Jesus, came in the press behind, and touched his garment. For she said, If I may touch but his clothes, I shall be whole. And straightway the fountain of her blood was dried up, and she felt in her body that she was healed of that plague. And Jesus, immediately knowing in himself that virtue had gone out of him, turned him about in the press and said, Who touched my clothes? And his disciples said unto him, Thou seest the multitude thronging thee, and sayest thou, Who touched me? And he looked round about to see her that had done this thing. But the woman, fearing and trembling, knowing what was done in her, came and fell down before him and told him all the truth. And he said unto her, Daughter, thy faith hath made thee whole. Go in peace and be whole of thy plague. And while he yet spake, there came from the ruler of the synagogue's house certain which said, Thy daughter is dead. Why troublest thou the master any further? And then we'll see the third account in Luke chapter 8 this morning. Luke chapter 8. And we'll begin in verse 41. And behold, there came a man named Jairus, and he was a ruler of the synagogue, and he fell down at Jesus' feet and besought him that he would come into his house. For he had one only daughter, about 12 years of age, and she lay a dying. But as he went, the people thronged him, and a woman having an issue of blood 12 years, which had spent all her living upon physicians, neither could be healed of any, came behind him and touched the border of his garment. And immediately her issue of blood staunched. And Jesus said, Who touched me? And when all denied, Peter and they that were with him said, Master, the multitude thronged thee and pressed thee, and sayest thou, Who touched me? And Jesus said, Somebody hath touched me, for I perceive that virtue is gone out of me. And when the woman saw that she was not hid, she came trembling and falling down before him. She declared unto him before all the people for what cause she had touched him and how she was healed immediately. And he said unto her, Daughter, be of good comfort. Thy faith hath made thee whole. And while he yet spake, there cometh one from the ruler of the synagogue's house, saying to him, Thy daughter is dead. Trouble not the master. Now, as we look at these different accounts of the same event, there's one thing that I want to make perfectly clear this morning, or try to make clear, and that is that this is in no way, shape, or form an illustration, or to be taken as an illustration, of eternal salvation. I know that you know that this morning, but there are many in the religious world that will take this in that way. And they'll say, well, she reached out to the Lord. And by her having faith and reaching out to the Lord, she was healed. And just like her, you and I can be eternally saved by reaching out to the Master and touching Him, having faith and exercising that faith in Him. Well, of course, we know, and we've spoken on this several times in the past, I don't have to belabor the point this morning, that one does not have faith unless they're already a child of God. So by her being able to exercise faith here in Jesus Christ, shows not that she's trying to get eternal salvation or is on the path to eternal salvation, but it shows that she's one that has already been quickened and made alive, has already been made an heir of heaven. We also find where Jesus turns around, if you get this scene in your mind, Jesus is walking through the crowd, and she's reaching out through this crowd, touching him. He turns around immediately, and he refers to her as daughter. Well, there again, we see that she is a child of God, I believe, and that's why that title is used there towards her. It's not one that, again, is trying to obtain salvation of the Lord, but one that already has salvation. We know that man has no ability to reach towards the Lord by nature unless they've already been quickened and made alive. Paul says that when we were without strength, in due time Christ died for the ungodly. One that's without strength is one that can't reach towards the Lord. And they'll say, well, this woman here, she was reaching towards him. She was only having that ability to do that because she was already a child of God, if you will. Again, if we're spiritualizing this and trying to draw that lesson from it. But interestingly enough, as I began to think about this, if this was in fact teaching perhaps a lesson of eternal salvation, which it is not, but if it were, if somebody were to ask you that, I want you to ask them this question. How is she cured before her confession? You know, many will say, if you just confess the name of the Lord, then you'll be saved. And they'll use again this example here, this woman reaching towards the Lord. Well, she was cured the moment she touched his garment, wasn't she? It wasn't until after the Lord turned around and said, "Who touched me?" Then she made a public confession of the Lord. Then she said, "It was me, Lord. I had faith that I would be healed by touching you." She was cured before she made a confession. And so ask them that question when they bring this up as perhaps an example of eternal salvation. I don't believe it is. I think it's a wonderful illustration for us, and we'll get to this later, of a timely salvation. But we have the setting here, and the setting is that Jesus is now in this place of Capernaum, I believe, and this was a city, I believe, that Jesus visited often. And being in this place now, this leader or ruler of the synagogue, Jairus, comes to him. And I wanted to make sure we got that context this morning because that's going to be very important later on. So this ruler of the synagogue, Jairus, comes to him and says, "My daughter is sick. She's 12 years old. It's his only daughter. She's at the point of death. And soon he's going to get the message that she's actually died." And so he's coming and he's asking the Lord to go and touch her and heal her if it would be according to his will. And then as he's walking along to Jairus' house and the throng is all around him, then we have this woman who reaches out towards the Lord. And she has this issue of blood, it says. And for a long time I thought that meant that perhaps she was diseased in her blood. And I don't want to go into a lot of detail this morning, but it's not really speaking of any sort of disease in her blood. It's speaking about the reproductive cycle of a woman. And she has now been in this cycle, if you will, stuck in this cycle for 12 years. So you can imagine, perhaps, the pain that she's going through. You can imagine the physical stress that that's putting upon her body. To lose blood like that day after day after day for 12 years. She's no doubt anemic at this point. She's no doubt very weak in the flesh. It probably took whatever strength she had to fight her way through that crowd to reach out to the Lord. She's very ill, very sick in this cycle, if you will, being stuck in that cycle. But not only did she have just physical ailments, not only did she just have the physical distress of her body, I believe she was probably going through very much emotional and mental and spiritual distress. If you read about some of the things she endured, it says, of course, she's had this for 12 years, and she suffered many things of many physicians. You know, that means she's kind of become a medical guinea pig, if you will. Back then, they didn't have all the technology that the Lord has blessed us with today. And she's gone to these different physicians, and they probably have no idea what is happening to this woman. And she's gone from physician to physician to physician, and they keep saying, well, maybe that's not going to work, or this hasn't worked, let's try this. And they just kind of are using her for exploratory medical practices, if you will. She's suffered many things of many physicians. Now, let me say this morning that I believe that is a very reasonable path for somebody to take. If somebody's ill in this life, there's nothing wrong with going to the doctor. I don't believe that this is somehow speaking ill of physicians, but rather it's just showing the great limitations that man and even the greatest and the smartest of men have compared to the Lord. All these physicians couldn't do anything for her, but we know the Lord could. We know that He's the great physician and that there's nothing too hard for Him. So it's not really speaking ill of physicians. It's just, again, showing us the limitations that man has. But she has taken this reasonable path to find a cure, and she suffered many things because of it. She was not healed, but one of the accounts said she actually grew worse. Not only did she not just stay the same, she kept getting worse and worse as time went by. Now, I can't imagine, again, the mental and the emotional distress that that would put on a person. For a period of 12 years to go from physician to physician to physician and just keep getting worse. I mean, when I go to my doctor for some reason and it takes him about a week to figure something out or two or three visits to figure out what I've got, that kind of begins to worry me. I get a little distressed over that. Well, you know, why can't we find out what this is? Run some tests. Let's get to the bottom of this. She's having these continual disappointments in life where she's going to a physician. They're probably saying, well, here's a medicine you can try. Let's see if this works. She's probably getting her hopes up. And then, lo and behold, nothing happens. She just continues to get worse. So she's having this just continual disappointment over and over in her life. But on top of that, the account also says she spent all she's had. She's used every bit of money that she has in this life to try to find a cure for what's ailing her. And no doubt that's distressing because she's probably thinking, well, I've spent all I've had. Now I've got these other necessities of life that I have to provide for. How am I going to provide for these things? But even worse, how am I going to continue to find a cure if I don't have money for doctors anymore? She'd spent everything she had. Her days of going to the doctor were over. She couldn't afford to go back. She'd done, wasted or spent all of her living on trying to find a cure. And so she, again, probably had a great emotional and a mental distress from that. In addition to the physical distress of losing that amount of blood over that long of a period. But there's more to it, I believe, that she suffered. And that is, again, in this emotional and mental and spiritual category. If you look this morning to the book of Leviticus, we're going to find how a woman in her condition was to be treated in the social realm or by the public. We look at Leviticus chapter 15 and verse 25. It says, "And if a woman have an issue of her blood many days out of the time of her separation, or if it run beyond the time of her separation, all the days of the issue of her uncleanness shall be as the days of her separation, she shall be unclean." So because she has this issue of blood, she is now regarded unclean by the Jewish people. She's one that people can't get around. She's one that she can't touch them. She's one that they don't want to be around her. She's not supposed to be around them. It's just, again, this separation from society. But let's read more here in Leviticus. "Every bed whereon she shall lieth all the days of her issue shall be unto her as the bed of her separation, and whatsoever she sitteth upon shall be unclean as the uncleanness of her separation." So what we're reading there is, for 12 years, this woman, I don't know if she's had a husband, I don't know if she's had a mother, I don't know if she's had friends, I don't know what the case is in her private life, but I know that if she did have any connections or relationships like that, if she was to ever have anybody come over and sit on her bed or her furniture or something like that, then they themselves would be unclean. And on top of that, if she went perhaps and ever saw one of her relations or friends or something like that, and she sat on a chair, well, as we read here in Leviticus, they'd have to take the chair out of the house. They'd have to take the furniture out, and they'd have to take baths and so forth because she was unclean. Now, the point I'm getting at is this. Nobody likes to be the person that has the cold sitting in the corner by themselves because nobody wants to be around them. Now, I'm not saying if you've got a cold that you need to be around people. I'm not saying that. We understand that this morning. But nobody likes to be the sick person in the room that nobody wants to talk to, that nobody wants to be around. Well, that's what this woman endured for 12 years. Nobody could be around her. Nobody could touch her. If they did, then they were going to have to go through many hoops in order to cleanse themselves. And it goes on to say then that on the eighth day in verse 29, she shall take unto her two turtle doves or two young pigeons and bring them unto the priest to the door of the tabernacle of the congregation. And the priest shall offer the one for a sin offering and the other for a burnt offering. And the priest shall make an atonement for her before the Lord for the issue of her uncleanness. Well, the eighth day is supposed to be when the issue of blood was resolved. So after the bleeding had stopped, she was to then go to the priest, and the priest was going to take care of the matter and cleanse her of that uncleanness, make the atonement for her. Well, she had bled for 12 years. 12 years she couldn't go to the temple. 12 years she couldn't go see the priest. Can you imagine not going to church for 12 years? Can you imagine being in that state to where not only did nobody want to see you, but you couldn't go and hear the goodness of the Lord for 12 years? That would be terrible. She's no doubt in a very pitiful spiritual state. Mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, she's just got all these things going against her. That's what she's enduring here. And so keep that in mind as you begin to think about this issue that she had. Now, it says in one of the accounts there that she had heard of Jesus. And she had heard of Jesus, and then she had then the saying within herself, "If I may touch the hem of his garment, I may be clean." I began to think about that expression, "She had heard of Jesus." You know, that's something that we all should strive for. We should all want to hear more about Jesus, shouldn't we? Me included in that. I like to hear sermons, and I enjoy preaching sermons on things like church discipline and financial support of the church and things like that. Those are very needful things, if you will. But what we should be perhaps concerned about the most is hearing Jesus. Now, Paul said that he had determined to know nothing among them, I believe he wrote that to the Corinthians, save Jesus Christ and him crucified. That's what we ought to be about this morning, is we want to hear about Jesus. And when she heard about Jesus, then she put the faith of the Lord, or the faith that she had in the Lord, into work. She exercised her faith. You know, if you hear about the Lord, and you hear about what wonderful things he's done, what wonderful things he's done in your life, if you hear about the goodness of the Lord, and having heard of the Lord, you exercise no faith in the Lord, shame on you. Shame on you. But this woman, she did exactly what she was supposed to do. She heard of Jesus, and she exercised faith in the Lord. She said, I need to get down there to where that man is. I need to get down there, even if I may just but barely touch the hem of his garment. She had this wonderful faith in the Lord. In fact, it was a faith that the Lord commended, wasn't it? He turned to her and he said, thy faith hath made thee whole. He was commending the faith that she had in him. It was a faith that I want to have in my life, a faith that outlived the discouragements for 12 years and the continual disappointments that there's going to be a cure, that I will be cured one day. It outlived all of those discouragements. But more than that, it outlived the failures. It was just a simple faith in the Lord. As one commentator said, it was a faith so strong that she knew he would bless her even though he was busy, and even though his back was turned. That's beautiful this morning, I believe. Think about this. He was busy at this time, wasn't he? He was on the way to Jairus' house. And yet, even though he was so busy at that moment, yet when he felt that virtue had gone out of him, he took time to stop and talk to this woman. And dear friends, that's the same with you and I this morning. We've tried to mention that in the past, I believe, that the Lord's never too busy for you. There's no issue that you can't take before the Lord. There's nothing that you can do that would deter him in his path in going forward, or derail him in going forward, if you will. He's always got time for you. And remember that in the days ahead, as you might face infirmities in this life. Notice, too, it was a faith, as I said, that he would heal her, that she would be healed even though his back was turned. Did you read that, or did you see that as we read through it? That she came up behind him. He had already passed by. She was behind him and reaching out to the hem of his garment. And a lot of the Lord's children, they don't have much faith in the Lord if he's right there facing them. But what faith she had, that even though the Lord's busy, even though he's on this mission over here, yet I can just reach out even behind him and he'll still bless me. And the Lord's commending her for that faith. And she reached forward to the Lord knowing that she was unworthy. She reached forward to the Lord knowing she wasn't supposed to do that. She was unclean. She wasn't supposed to be touching anybody. But yet she reached forward to the Lord knowing that it was going to be okay. I believe she had perhaps those ideas running through her mind when she reached forward. I believe that she was looking forward to the Lord and looking toward the hem of his garment, knowing that she was unworthy, that she shouldn't be touching him, and that she just felt condemned in her mind as she reached forward. Look to the book of Numbers this morning. The book of Numbers, and again, chapter 15. Numbers chapter 15. In verse 38, this is the Lord speaking to Moses. Speak unto the children of Israel and bid them that they make them fringes in the borders of their garments throughout their generations, and that they put upon the fringe of the borders a riband of blue. And it shall be unto you for a fringe, that ye may look upon it and remember all the commandments of the Lord and do them, and that ye seek not after your own heart and your own eyes, after which ye used to go a whoring, that ye may remember and do all the commandments and be holy unto your God. So Jesus, being a Jew, he would have on this customary white outer garment that would be cinched at the waist, and then on the hem, the very bottom of that, would be this ribbon of blue. That's what the Jewish people wore. And again, as we saw in Numbers, there was a reason for that. It just wasn't a fashion statement. It was to remind them of the laws of the Lord. It was to remind them of the commandments of the Lord. So as she's reaching forward and she's seeing this blue ribbon at the base of the garment of Jesus, she's looking directly and having in her mind, no doubt, about the laws of the Lord and how she's unclean and she shouldn't even be reaching towards them. She's no doubt condemned in her mind. What's Paul say about the law in Galatians? He says, the law is nothing but a schoolmaster that leads us to Christ. I believe that probably also was going through her mind. Lord, I'm unworthy. I have no standing of righteousness before you. I'm condemned under the law. But this man, he's above the law. He's fulfilled the law. And through him, I have hope. And she's reaching forward, not perhaps caring anymore about the blue ribbon and what that means, but reaching to the Lord himself and seeing that he is her only hope. I believe that was probably going through her mind at that time. She's reaching forward to the one that had fulfilled the Lord, having faith in him that he would fulfill the law, knowing though her own unworthiness and that he was her only hope. And so the Lord then, he feels the touch, or he perceives that virtue has gone out of him. And he now turns around and he says, who's touched me? Who's touched me? Now that's an interesting question of the Lord, isn't it? Because we understand this morning that Jesus Christ is God. And being God, he has the same attributes of every other member of the Godhead. And one of the attributes is that he is omniscient. He knows anything and everything. And there are several accounts in Scripture that speak to the omniscience of Christ. Never be swayed by somebody that tells you Jesus Christ laid aside his deity when he came into this life. Never be swayed by someone that says Jesus Christ laid aside his divine attributes when he came into this life. He was fully God and he was fully man, and being fully God, he was omniscient. As Peter said, better than I'll ever say in a million sermons, Lord, thou knowest all things. Just a very clear and plain statement, isn't it? We're talking about a man that could tell somebody where to go and what fish to find and what they would find in that fish, the little gold coin. You believe that man didn't know who touched him? No, he knew exactly who touched him. He knew exactly. Being omniscient, again, he knew exactly who had touched her. But the woman, she at first was perhaps trying to hide. Not only was she no doubt very timid at this time, and she was weak in her sickness and so forth, and she knew that the Lord was busy going to Jairus' house, and she was no doubt trying to hide. But the Lord, when he asked the question, who's touched me, what was the Lord doing? I believe he was looking for a public confession from her. And he wasn't going to let it go. You know, the disciples that were there, they said, well, it could have been anybody. Look at the multitude around you. How are we supposed to know who touched you? Well, that wasn't just going to let it go in the mind of Christ. He goes on to say in one of the accounts that he perceives that virtue has gone out of him. He's wanting to know who touched him. He's wanting a public confession from this woman. She's not hid anymore, as one of the accounts says. He turns around immediately, from how I read the text. He turns around and there she is. There's really no hiding in that. She's the one on the ground. She's the one with her hand stretched forward. She's not hid anymore. There's really no hiding it. But the Lord, again, is asking the question, who has touched me? He's wanting a public confession from her. And it can be a fearful thing to make a public confession in the Lord, can it? She was fearful. She was trembling. She wasn't really wanting to speak up in the beginning. It was kind of fearful to make a public confession in the Lord. But I believe it's needful to make a public confession. And I believe Christ saw it as needful here on this occasion. It's needful, of course, at this time for the glory of the Lord. He's wanting, I believe, everybody in that crowd to know what this woman has gone through, and how just by one touch of his garment, she was healed. He's wanting everybody to know that. He's wanting to have that as proof of his deity. You know, as we read in the Gospels, one of the stamps, if you will, or one of the signs that he is truly the Son of God was the miracles that he performed. Well, if all of his miracles were hid, and if nobody were to see those miracles or profess about the miracles that they had received from the Lord, then it would do away again with some of the proof that he was in fact the Son of God. So it's very needful that this woman come forward and say, let me tell you, it was me that touched you. I had this issue of blood for 12 years, and just by touching the hem of your garment, I immediately felt the blood dry up inside me. It was needful for His glory. It was needful to show and prove that He was the very Son of God. But more than that, dear friends, I believe the public confession was needful for the sake of others. Now, I gave you the context of Jairus for a reason, and I believe that in the Bible and the Word of God here, we are given the context of Jairus for a reason. It's not just something I came up with. It's given to us for a reason. And the reason is this. Jairus has come to the Lord, and he says, Lord, my daughter, my little 12-year-old daughter, is sick. She's at the point of death. She needs to be healed by you. And so as they're heading now back to Jairus' house, they come across this woman who, for as long as that little girl has been alive, has had this issue of blood. The exact same period of time. The little girl was 12. This woman's had her issue of blood for 12 years. Now, after she reaches out and she touches the hem of the garment of Jesus and she's healed by touching, then she makes this public confession, and making that public confession, what happens? Some of the servants of Jairus come to Jairus and they say, your daughter's dead. She's passed away. Let's not bother the Lord anymore. Might as well just forget about it. You're too late. Well, imagine how Jairus would have felt having received that word if the woman had not publicly confessed what had just happened to her. If the Lord had turned around and said, who touched me? And she just went on about her way and she didn't say, it was me. And let me tell you about the healing that I received. Then how would Jairus feel when then he came and heard the word that his daughter had died? He may not have much hope. He may have still had some hope, but I dare say he would not have had as much hope as he had because of her confession. They come and they say, your daughter is dead. Does he have reason to hope now? Absolutely. He's still got reason to hope in the Lord because he just saw and heard with his very eyes how this woman who had had this issue of blood for the same number of years has been healed by the man Jesus Christ. You see how that must have blessed his heart when they said, don't bother the master anymore. He says, forget you. Come on, Jesus, we're going to my house. You need to work on my daughter a little bit over here. There's still hope in the Lord. Oh, how it must have blessed the heart of Jairus. And I believe, again, that's why we're given that context. And I believe, again, I believe that's why it's so powerful that she was 12 and this woman had been sick for 12 years. There's nothing too hard for the Lord, and Jairus learned that on the way to his house that day when the Lord was going to heal and raise up his dead daughter. And so it's needful for the sake of others, for those that are already following and seeking after the Lord. Jairus was one that was seeking after the Lord, wasn't he? But perhaps it's even needful for those that don't yet know they're going to follow after the Lord or haven't made up their mind, perhaps, whether they want to follow after the Lord. Turn to Matthew chapter 14 and we'll read an account there very quickly this morning. As I said, I know we've done a lot of reading, but hopefully it's been useful. In Matthew chapter 14, and we'll begin in verse 34. And when they were gone over, this now of course is after the account of the woman with the issue of blood. And when they were gone over, they came into the land of Gennesaret. Now, Gennesaret and Capernaum are about 3 miles apart, I'm told, just within walking distance of one another. But this is sometime later, and now Christ is in Gennesaret. And when the men of that place had knowledge of him, they sent out into all that country round about and brought unto him all that were diseased and besought him that they might only touch the hem of his garment. And as many as touched were made perfectly whole. Do you see how this woman, by publicly confessing that the Lord had healed just by a touch of his garment, has gone throughout the land, and many others now are touched and healed by the Lord. What a wonderful blessing this little woman was in the lives of so many. If she had just said, oh, it wasn't me, if she had denied like all the rest and gone on about her business, nobody 3 miles down the road would know what happened, and they wouldn't be going about finding all the disease so that they could just touch the hem of his garment. She was a wonderful blessing in the lives of many because of her public confession. It was necessary for that reason as well. But I dare say too this morning, perhaps a public confession is necessary for our own sakes, not just to bless the lives of others like Jairus and those down the road in this account, but even for the sake of this woman, I believe a public confession was necessary for her own sake. You say, Brother Nathan, what do you mean by that? Well, she was already cured. She was already healed. Whether she had said, Lord, it was me that touched you, whether she said that or not, she already was healed, right? She could have gone on about her way, but she would not know that she was forever healed, would she? She'd go back to her house, having been cured, and probably in the back of her mind, she'd always think, I wonder if this is going to come back someday. I wonder if I'm going to have to endure this again. But by confessing to the Lord, Lord, it was me that touched you. Lord, it was me that you healed. By confessing to him, then the Lord turns around to her and gives her a little message of comfort, doesn't he? And says, thy faith hath made thee whole. You're completely healed of this plague. It's not going to come back again, little daughter. What a message of comfort that was to her, and how necessary that was for her in the days ahead, that she not continually worry, am I going to be plagued with this again? No, the Lord put that matter to rest. He said, you're healed, completely healed. I started out by saying this morning that this is not a lesson for eternal salvation, but I believe that this is a lesson for every single person in this room. I believe that everybody in this room has spiritually been where this lady was. You say, Brother Nathan, how's that? I believe there has been a point probably in the lives of everyone here and every child of God perhaps where they had a sickness, a sin sickness, if you will, that they couldn't find a cure for. They just felt this sickness in their soul. Just something that they couldn't get rid of. Maybe they'd searched the world over and they just couldn't get rid of it. They just couldn't find a cure for what they were feeling. And perhaps it was even like this woman. Perhaps it just got worse and worse and worse. You just felt this burden pressing and pressing upon you. But then you heard about the Lord, didn't you? You heard about Jesus Christ and you exercised some faith in the Lord, didn't you? And you reached out to the Lord. You looked past your own unworthiness and your own condemnation under the law, and you looked to the Lord as the one that had fulfilled the law, the one that the law was pointing you to the entire time. And you're looking to him and reaching out to him and exercising that faith. Hopefully your faith is like this woman's, reaching out that you might have then this cure for your sin-sick soul. Again, I've quoted it many times here in the past, the invitation that Christ gave, come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. He's speaking to those that are under this bondage and under this burden of being sin sick. Not one that's reaching out to him for eternal salvation. It's not an invitation to the dead, it's an invitation to the living. And just like this woman, I believe every one of us have been in that position before. We've all reached out to the Lord and we've made a public confession to the Lord, saying, Lord, I touched you. Lord, let me tell you what you did for me. You healed me. You cured me, and I'm never going to have it again. You've healed me from this plague. Some might say, well, I can't make a public confession. Some might say it's just too much of an ordeal to make a public confession. Let me say this morning that there's nobody that will ever probably have a greater ordeal in this life and a harder time, if you will, making a public confession than this woman here. There's probably nobody that will ever have a greater ordeal than her in making that confession. And so when somebody says, well, I just don't know if I can make a public confession. I don't know if I can talk about the greatness of the Lord and what he's done in my life. Dear friends, that's just hogwash. In fact, we should perhaps spend the remainder of our days talking about the greatness of the Lord and how wonderful He's been to us and how that's going to bless the lives of so many. How that's going to bless the lives of others round about. I mean, you think about the time when you see one coming before the Lord and you see him coming in front of the church saying, "I'm just a sinner that has no hope of heaven except in the Lord." And you see that person come before the church. How does that just fill your heart with joy? And how you just want to cheer. How that just encourages you along life's way to see how the Lord's worked in the lives of others. And how he'll continue to work in your life. And how that'll be a blessing not only to you, but how that'll be a blessing to others round about you in your life. I think it's very important that we do just like this little lady here. And we make it a priority to publicly confess how wonderful the Lord has been to us. And what great comfort we'll have from that. Comfort that we feel ourselves to be children. He turns around and he addresses us as daughter or son. You're made to feel like you're a child of God. You're made to feel that he cares for you and that he loves you. And you're made to feel that now you're cured. That burden is just lifted off of you. And you hear the comforting words of the Lord. You know and you come to understand that the Lord is not angry with you in your life. You know, this woman here, she probably thought for just a few seconds as the Lord turned around and wondering who touched me. She no doubt probably didn't want to speak up because she thought the Lord might be angry. But was the Lord angry with her? No. Again, he addressed her as daughter and told her what wonderful things she had done by exercising her faith, commending her faith, and how her faith had made her whole. And so certainly we should again publicly confess the Lord. Yes, we have shortcomings and we have failures in this life, but the Lord's never going to be unhappy because we stand up and say how good he's been to us. He's not going to say, "Oh, I don't want that person as my spokesman." He's going to be very happy that we have the courage, even though we're fearful at times and trembling at times, we have the courage to stand up and talk about the goodness of the Lord. And so I think there are several lessons from this account. Go home and study upon it, and I'm sure you'll find many others that I've missed. But let's stand and sing a hymn this morning and give each other the right hand of fellowship.